In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, you know Adams. Alan Adams joining us right here in studio on this Monday afternoon. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well.
How did your weekend go?
It was good. It was a relatively uneventful one, which, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, this time of year, we'll go for that.
You know,
sure.
Spent most of our time close to home, although we went down east and visited with the in-laws on Saturday because due to various illnesses and other obstacles, we had yet to do Christmas with our in-laws.
Right, right.
And so, we did Christmas on Saturday.
Good for you.
Well, you know, it's I made the joke and, you know, Father, forgive me. but I made the joke that, Jesus saw a shadow.
Six more weeks of Christmas.
That's what I'm saying.
There you go. Nice.
My son lives on the same piece of property, and we still haven't done Christmas for the same reasons. They live 110 yards up the hill.
They were sick, then we were sick, then they were sick again, then we were sick again. But, you know, we got there, and it was nice.
There you go. Well, and look, it's a fun time. Nothing wrong with doing it because you had a Christmas celebration of your own. Nice to have one with just them. Now,
you know, spread it out a little bit.
There you go.
It was nice. Yeah, that was nice. But other than that, we stayed pretty close to home. So that was also nice.
Now, Super Bowl this weekend. Did you do anything for the Super Bowl? Do you make some food?
Like, we'll probably do some snacky type stuff. Hmm. Like, I'm not averse to going to a Super Bowl party, but I'm not going to host one.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just... Like, it's fine, like, and it's a good time, like, and it's fun to watch with a group of people, but
it's so much better because of it's a long day and the game goes late. It's so much better to just walk away at the end of the night and not have to clean anything up.
Exactly. And so so we'll do something, whether it's making some snacks at home, if we get an 11th hour invite to something, maybe we'll go, maybe we won't, because as you said, there's also something really satisfying about, you know, it being, you know, about, you know, one team being up 3 touchdowns midway through the third quarter, and you're just like, you know what, I'm just going to go to bed.
Yep, exactly. I'm full. I can't possibly eat anymore.
And it is because, you know, the game started so late, it's already 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So let's move this along.
There you go.
I've never been to a Super Bowl party.
Oh.
And I don't know why. I mean, I've been invited a few times and I couldn't go. Huh, I probably should do that before I... turn 75.
They're fun, but and to me it always depends on whether or not I have a dog in the hunt.
If right, exactly.
If I don't want to go to a party if my team is playing, because I want to watch the game.
Yeah.
But this year, what do I care?
Yeah, well, and that's and as you were saying earlier, what does anyone care outside of the confines of Kansas City and or San Francisco?
Right.
But it'll be fine. I'll watch, like, and I will I will have a good time. Frankly, I think it's probably going to be a minute before I have a rooting interest in the Super Bowl again. So I might as well just lean into the leisure of it.
So you're a Giants fan too.
Hey,
I'm a Giant. Hey. You know as well as I do.
We'll be back. We'll be back. Maybe not this century. Maybe not my lifetime, but. We'll be back. Did you see any movies since last we visited?
You know, I did. I did get to see a couple. Mm. I went to the theater.
Oh, very nice.
To see one, and I watched one at home. I went to the theater and saw the new Matthew Vaughn movie Argylle.
I'm very curious to hear what you thought of
that. It's going to be talking about. It's going to be complicated.
Okay.
And then on Netflix, there's a kind of delightful animated kids movie called Orion in the Dark.
Oh yes.
Based on a kids book, but with a screenplay by Charlie Kaufman.
Yes, well, I was reading about that last week, talking about it. Yeah,
and it's a weird, and it's got a really talented cast, and and it proved to be quite a good movie. And you know me, I'm a sucker for the animated kids movies anyway. Mm. But this is a particularly solid example of the genre.
Mm.
So which would you like to talk about first?
Well, I think we're gonna have some fun talking Argylle. So let's hear about Orion in the Dark.
Yeah, let's start with that one. That makes sense. So it's streaming on Netflix. It's directed by a gentleman by the name of Sean Sharmatz. It's his first feature film. As I said, the screenplay by Charlie Kaufman. And it's based on the book of the same name by Emma Yarlett. And yeah, it's got a great cast. Jacob Tremblay, Paul Walter Hauser, Angela Bassett, Colin Hanks, Ike Barinholtz, Matt Fax. Just like a really talented group. So the basic gist is you have this young boy named Orion, voiced by Tremblay, who is basically scared of everything. He's scared of, of being called on in class. He's scared of not being called on in class. He's scared of being in the locker room. He's scared of gym class. He's scared of haircuts and bees and bullies and the ocean. Like, he's just scared of stuff. But his biggest fear is the dark. He's very, very scared of the dark. To the point where every night is an ongoing battle between him and his parents because he is so afraid of being alone in the dark. And then until one night, he's freaking out at the dark, and the dark talks back.
That would freak me out even more.
In the voice of Paul Walter Hauser.
Oh, my.
Which is delightful. And basically, what we learn is, the dark has a little bit of a complex because everyone's so afraid of him. And love so it. He wants Orion to come with him on his nightly journey so he can show Orion that, there's really not that much to be scared about.
Mm.
And so we're whisked off into the world where we meet some of Knight's fellow nocturnal entities, they're called. There's Sweet Dreams, that's Angela Bassett, which is a good one. Then there's Sleep and Insomnia, which is pretty hilarious. But then it starts getting weird. There's Quiet, which is a little tiny mouse thing that that speaks, but you can't actually hear, which is pretty funny. And, of course, Unexplained Noises.
Oh, oof.
Yeah, it's basically like a weird robot thing that basically hides outside your house and bangs trash cans to freak you out. So these are the nighttime entities.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's super fun. But they're also in a very complicated relationship with Day. Light, played by Ike Barinholtz, is, seems like a nice guy, maybe a little full of himself.
Sure.
But the truth is, like, they're always in opposition because you can't have one. You can't have them both at the same time.
Yeah.
And so if Dark and his cohort don't stay ahead of Light, then, well, something terrible might happen.
Ooh.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but we might learn a little bit about what that something is as we go along. I'm going to stop there because there are some interesting turns that this story takes. But yeah, it's like, again, like I don't have a lot of high expectations for animated films simply because, it's like the audience is different. Like, and it's like, you don't necessarily consume material, the same as a, an 8-year-old as you do as a, as a middle-aged dude. However, there are some moments in this movie that are very, very clearly aimed directly at me. Like, me specifically.
That's Charlie Kaufman. He knows. Yeah.
Well, it's like, okay, this is just one joke. It's at the beginning, so it's not a spoiler. But he's trying to, our boy Orion's trying to convince his parents to let him stay up longer. He's like, oh, hey, maybe we could do a bedtime story. Wouldn't that be fun? Like, just like old times. And then he goes to his bookshelf and he starts digging around. And he pulls out this giant, thick book. And he's like, this one looks good. And the mom, swear to God, is like, I don't know if now's the time to be starting David Foster Wallace. And I'm like, okay, Orion in the Dark, you get me.
Wow.
You get me, and we are going to do this. We are going to enjoy this together.
That is fantastic.
So yeah, so there are moments like that sprinkled throughout the film.
Did you look around?
It's like, are they watching me? Yeah. Like, should I like cover the camera on my laptop? Is my phone listening to me right now?
Wow.
No, it was really very cool, and but it's fun. Like I said, the voice talent is exceptional, and so that goes a long way. The stylistically, it's very interesting. It's got this wonderful sort of framing device where it's at a certain point we realize, oh, like it's like a story within a story, and so you've got that kind of framing device. The first thing I thought of was The Princess Bride. That sort of framing, piece, although it doesn't show up until kind of later in the film, but still. Really well made, really, really thoughtful, really funny. And it's the sort of movie, and I know a lot of filmmakers try to do this, but this one actually succeeds in that I think it is a movie that could be literally generational in its appeal, where it's like little kids, like older kids, you know, young parents, older parents, grandparents. Like I think anyone could sit down and watch this movie. And again, that doesn't happen very often. So like, yeah, and it's, you know, and I wasn't expecting a ton, you know, because, you know, Netflix churns it out.
Right.
But, you know, you start seeing the names who were involved and you're like, okay, so this has a shot. And it turns out, yeah, it came together really nicely. So, yeah, if you've got little ones at home, or even if you don't, Orion in the Dark, it's worth a watch.
That sounds great. I will definitely check that out. Talking Movies with Alan Adams here on Downtown. When I saw the first trailer for Argyle, I thought, okay, this is strange. I'm not sure what it is. But I saw the cast and thought, well, this thing has got to be great. And then yesterday, I saw that the Boston Globe film critic gave it the first 0-star rating he has ever given a film. So I'm very curious to hear what you have to say.
Well, I hate to disappoint, but it was not a 0-star watch for me. I could see how you could get there, honestly. But yeah, like I get the sense that I enjoyed this movie maybe more than some people would. It's complicated for a number of reasons. So Argyle, like the conversation surrounding the film, leading up to the film, I think you need it for context. So basically what we have here is this movie is adapted from a book that only came out a week before the movie did. From an author, the author named Ellie Conway, which is the same name of the author in the movie, but no one could seem to figure out who Ellie Conway was.
Right, right.
So it's like, is it a joke? Is it real? Does the book exist? Like, did Taylor Swift write it? Because that was a thing the internet was doing for a week.
Yeah,
it's like, don't you remember that book, that video Taylor Swift did where she was like writing a book? Well, yeah, this is clearly... This is clearly where we landed. But the director, Matthew Vaughn, is notorious for getting a little weird and meta with his stuff. He's best known for the Kingsman movies, but he's made a number of other films as well. And so it's, you know, all that stuff comes together. You watch the bonkers trailer and you're just like, well, what the hell is this all about?
Yeah. And what about that poor cat?
This is what I'm saying. So the gist of it, such as it is, Ellie Conway, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, is a spy novelist. She writes these spy books starring a secret agent named Argyle. And we see these stories playing out through her imagination. So you have Henry Cavill is Agent Argyle, his trusty assistant, Wyatt, is played by John Cena. We meet them in Greece, where they're trying to stop some ill-defined bad guys from getting their hands on a list of agents, because that's always the sort of the MacGuffin of choice in this kind of story. We go through our cliffhanger ending, and then it turns out, oh, we're actually at a reading. The author is giving a reading of her book at this bookstore, and, you know, and there's a Q&A afterwards and all that stuff. And turns out that Ellie, bit of an introvert, like not really great with people. Her primary relationship is with her cat. Her cat's name is Alfie. He's very cute. Very got one of those smushed in face cats with the tiny nubbin ears. Very cute. She's a bit of an agoraphobe, etc. So like she can't fly. So she winds up taking the train. She's going to take the train to go see her mom. Her mom, played by Catherine O'Hara, by the way.
Yeah.
And she's great. And she's also going to see her dad, who we eventually find out is a friend of downtown, Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
But she's right.
So how can this be bad? It can't be that bad with all these
just,
people.
Man. We haven't even gotten to the part where a crazily bearded Sam Rockwell shows up on the train and is like, oh, hey, I love your books. By the way, are you psychic? Because everything you write in these books is real. Yeah. And that's when the other spies show up to... Well, it's unclear what they're trying to do, but Sam Rockwell dispatches of them very quickly in full-on spy mode. He rescues, air quotes, rescues our author, and away we go. And it turns out that Ellie is being watched by all these various spy agencies, both good guys and bad guys, because the evil organization that she invented for her books turns out is real. And so they apparently want her to because they've been following and hacked into her stuff. So they know what the next book is. But they're like, well, we need another chapter because we need to know where this thing is. So write the chapter so we know what's happening. And it gets even more complicated about midway through the film where there's a pivot that I can't tell you about. But it drastically alters the dynamic for the rest of the movie, and I can't say it because it's such a huge twist and spoiler. Okay. and whatever. But suffice it to say, Ellie winds up going on the sorts of adventures that her apparently not so fictional spy also engaged with, and the back half of the movie is when it all gets kind of bonkers, where we get to see. Among other things, director Matthew Vaughn's real affection for over-the-top gonzo action set pieces, those particularly fight scenes that are very stylized and weirdly colorful.
Well, which we see a lot of that in the Kingsman movies.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. And it's even more absurd than those are. There's one. Actually, there's a scene that involving an oil slick and knives on boots that I think Bruce would actually quite enjoy. It's a different kind of skating, but it still counts. Uh-huh. And then, like, it's so weird to talk about this movie because there are so many elements that are, you know, intended to be surprises or twists that it's difficult to talk about it in any sort of coherent way. And, you know, also contributing is the fact that I'm not entirely sure the movie is coherent. and I say this as someone who had a genuinely good time watching the movie, but it's definitely one of those where if you get to the halfway point and you're not just like, you don't just flip all the switches off and just lean back and let the spectacle happen, like there are so many threads that you just cannot pull or the whole thing's gonna unravel.
Well, I like that. I love movies that are nonlinear and take some chances and look at things in multiple perspectives. To me, those are wildly enjoyable, inventive films.
Exactly. And that's the fun of watching it. Like this is not a story for the ages. Like this is not like, but it's a piece of like brightly colored pop art. Like that's what it is. And if you consume it in that way and you don't let your expectations get too high with regards to a lot of things, then you're going to have a good time. Because again, like these are all very talented people.
And are they chomping scenery or are they playing it fairly straight?
Well, Bryce Dallas Howard like keeps it pretty low key. I don't think Sam Rockwell's capable of not chewing on the scenery, particularly when you put him in a role like this, right, where it's just when he shows up, he looks so absurd. And then, I mean, we do get anytime Sam Rockwell dances in a movie, I'm pretty excited. Mm-hmm. We get some of that.
Nice.
Like regular Sam Rockwell dancing. And there's one extended sequence that one could argue could be defined as a dream ballet. But it's perfect for Henry Cavill. Like he's so like, you know, it's like he's, I think he's a talented dude. Like people's opinions vary. I think he's a solid actor. However, if all you want him to do is stand around looking handsome in like a green velvet Nehru jacket. Yeah. Like that's the guy you want. You know, and you know, Cena has a couple of fun scenes as the sidekick, and you know, oh man, Cranston and O'Hara together is fantastic. Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie. You don't see him till like 2/3 of the way through, but he's in it. And he actually is part a component to one of the key plot points as well. But it's just it's all this stuff, and it's an overstuffed kind of movie where it's like, you know, like you either needed to cut half an hour or turn it into a TV series. Mm. Like it's that sort of thing where it's like there's just a little too much for the space involved. I love the meta idea of the book begetting the movie, the movie, book, movie, like that sort of relationship. I like the secrecy behind it. Although I guess, you know, it turns out the secret's out. I'm not going to tell you. If you want to know, you can look it up. It's been revealed, like who the quote unquote author is. But yeah, I think the bummer is it has not done super well at the box office this weekend. And I feel like it's the kind of response that is going to make it that much more difficult to take this kind of weird swing.
Yeah. And I feel like their marketing maybe hurt them in that regard.
Well, I think they were trying something, you know, and like I said, I admire the effort. But yeah, like this, I'm not entirely sure what the right move is as far as marketing a movie like this, because it is so weird and so like, you know, and so different in its varying components. So it's like, how do you pitch this? But again, I'm always going to be here for, you know, original stories with a significant Hollywood budget behind them. They're not all gonna hit. Like that's the reality of it. But unfortunately, there are enough bean counters running things at this point where, you know, sometimes all it takes is one miss, and then it's like it's back to the IP mines for you.
All I could think watching the trailer was it was like a Wes Anderson movie on steroids.
Yeah, well, you know, a really interesting and comparable that I kind of noticed. I don't know if you ever got a chance to watch Bullet Train.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
It's kind of it's a little bit of that, right, where it's like that sort of like the bright colors. And we're not too worried about how well the plot hangs together.
Right.
Like we just want to watch interesting people like cracking jokes and cracking skulls. And, you know, if you want to make the story weird and meta, like so much the better.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Wes Anderson comp, I think, is a good one because there is a sense of sort of twisted whimsy to a lot of this that I think is, like I said, works very much for me, but it should be noted, your mileage will most definitely vary.
Well, I put much more stock in your thoughts on it than this schmo from the Boston Globe.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
Because you have not steered me wrong on many occasions. you like a film. Generally, I will like it too. Maybe we just have similarly unusual tastes.
That seems very that's a very plausible explanation.
That could happen. Yeah.
Name my next band, Twisted Whimsy.
By all means, all yours.
I like that. That's good.
Hey, before we let you go, Friday night, the focus group back at it again.
Yeah, the turnaround time's pretty quick, but we're trying to get in there at bay and get back on our monthly swing of things. So yeah, no, February 9th, 8:00, we'll be doing our thing at bay. We'll see how it goes. You know, it's a nice way to sort of beat the winter doldrums.
Absolutely,
I think.
Yeah. $10, can't go wrong with
that. Can't beat it.
Now.
Can't beat it.
Every seat's a great seat, and we'll be occasionally funny.
Yeah, no, every once in a while. And even when we're not funny, we're still going to be talking about poop and stuff. And
right.
Hard to go wrong.
I think so, too. Friday night, check it out, Bangor Arts Exchange. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams talking movies and more with us here on Downtown.